Hello, dear podcast friends. Welcome to Insights and Beyond, Digitalization, Sustainability and Technology, the podcast by Trelleborg Sealing Solutions. You're in the right place if you're interested in the driving questions around topics like digitalization, electrification and sustainability. And above all, if you want to participate in a discussion with your exciting questions and comments. Experience the talks with our experts from Trelleborg and specialists from business, industry and research. So have fun with a new episode of Insights and Beyond. In 2020, everything is different somehow, especially our mobility behavior. A survey by the German Car Sharing Association showed the number of bookings at member companies fell by 50% to 80% from mid-March to mid-April. But if you think now, well, that was only due to the lockdown, no, our mobility behavior has changed permanently. Currently, 40 to 50% fewer passengers are using public transportation services than in the time before the corona restrictions. Individual mobility is experiencing a renaissance. All the more, it's important that it becomes sustainable. That's what I'm talking about today with Stefan von Dobschütz, Managing Director, Energy E-Mobility Solutions, and Axel Weimann, General Manager at Trelleborg Sealing Solutions. Hi, guys.
Hey, hello.
Okay. Hello.
If someone were to give a book title about your impact on e-mobility, what would be the title of it, Axel?
I think one of the most matching titles for me personally is it's pretty much the same, but feels completely different.
That's a good one. So, Stefan.
Pioneers of e-mobility, from first attempts to Wall Street proven business models. That would be my title.
So you would have to walk the talk with that title. It's a very good one, but let's see how we can fill that book maybe today with our discussions already. Everyone is talking about e-mobility. What question would you be like to ask because you think it addresses an important but at the same time unnoticed problem? Stefan.
Why people are so excited about e-mobility? If you look at all the startups, if you look at the investment bankers and the financial sector, you see a lot of so-called SPACs now in the United States. So why do they attract a lot of money, these business models? There should be a case behind it. And I think to look at the growth rates there, what are the underlying assumptions? How do we predict the future? I think that's something we can focus on or elaborate a bit in this talk. That is something I would like to be asked.
Sounds like you think that this topic is a little bit overhyped.
Yeah, it's in a certain way it's overhyped, but on the other hand, it's also realistic because if Corona has done one positive thing, I think it has accelerated the trend of e-mobility. So we are coming out stronger out of the crisis than we have thought maybe half a year ago.
That's something which has to be proven, but that will show the future of our e-mobility, maybe. Axel, what do you think? Which question is important because it addresses something which is really important, but at the same time, very unnoticed?
I think one of the questions I was reading some years ago already is why are users and owners and drivers of e-cars, why don't they go back to combustion engines? So if you once drive an e-mobility, electric-powered car, why don't you change back? So this is a question I think is to be looked at a little bit more closer.
Is that something like an experience of the author or is it really like a statistic?
I think there are some statistics showing that, and you see that also in the numbers that the growing of drivers, the group of drivers of electric cars show that there is not a huge going back to combustion engines. So this group grows and grows because people don't go back to combustion engines. They just buy the next one, and other people are convinced that this is a good way of being mobile in the future.
Stefan, do you have the same experiences? Is it really like if they once drove an EV, they won't change it anyway? Or is it more like step by step, plug-in hybrid, then the masterpiece, the electric vehicle?
Before I joined Innogy, I used to work for BMW, and at that time we could clearly see it. Once we brought people to the i models, BMW i3 or i8, they never got back then to a plug-in hybrid or a normal combustion any longer. On the other hand, here at Innogy or the E.ON, we have company fleets, or the employees and managers are using that fleet. And once they have decided to go for an electric vehicle, they stick to that. Now, of course, 3 years ago, there were only available plug-in hybrids, but now the quota of pure electric vehicles is increasing sharply among the company fleet.
I have to admit, it is really an experience driving electric car, because I had the chance to test drive the Porsche Taycan, and I have to say I won't change it. If I could keep that car, I would keep it, but I'm pretty sure it's all about the model itself. And just one other cool fact and cool thing is that it's electric. Well, we joined together the virtual conference of Trelleborg Sealing Solutions in July, and there we ask the audience to ask their questions, and we have some questions left. And now I'm going to try to answer the questions with your help. So let's start with our first questions of the audience. The first one is, most electric vehicles that combat range anxiety still appear to be priced too highly for the average consumer. How far away are we from electric vehicle adoption for the masses? And he also, or she also, wrote high ranges of 400 kilometers and more. And one other statement of the viewer was, Renault shows the right way with the Zoe. So why do the OEMs look just after the of the range? What do you think?
Maybe I can answer this one. In July, that was also 1 month or 2 months before Volkswagen has just launched their ID3. Of course, or admittedly, it was a bit delayed. They have planned to launch it in April, but not now, it's September. And that is really a mass marketable product. It's affordable in the right price range, and it has also the right range. And also, if you look at other models which are currently in the market, the Opel Corsa, the Smart 4x4, and even the VW e-Golf, I would say they are affordable, they are mass marketable. On the other hand, yes, that's true that the German automotive companies went for more the SUVs in the first instance, but that is just one range or one customer segment. That's definitely not the end game.
Is that a really good measurement? I mean, for me, it's something like the BMI, the body mass index. If I have a lot of muscles, I'm heavier than someone who hasn't got a lot of muscles. So my BMI is totally fine, but it looks bad when you have a look at the numbers. So is it a wrong measurement to only have a look at the range numbers? What do you think?
That's the most obvious thing. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, to look at the range from a consumer perspective, but not, that's not everything. You also need to look at the charging behavior. How quickly can I charge my car? And then it's a combination of both. In combination with the charging infrastructure out there, and then you can make up your mind. But therefore, you need to do a bit of math. But most because car purchase is not only a rational decision, it's also emotional. People just spot the range and say, okay, that gives me peace of mind. Therefore, you know, I look out for the range. Maybe that's an explanation why people focus very much on the range and not considering other factors.
Yeah, and I think it's also about, let's say, a range which is critical and a range which is acceptable. And it seems that 300 kilometers and above is acceptable for mass usage. And below, it was just for fast starters in usage of these cars. And my personal experience is with some years ago with a Nissan Leaf, where you had 150 plus minus kilometers. It is something that you have to take into consideration if you go for some rides. Now with a Zoe, which is my current car as an electric car, and 300 kilometers plus minus, you use it more or less as a standard car without any second thought about using it in the morning. But I think the other topic for the German car manufacturers is that they are diversifying their cars to other brands. by specific characteristic attributes. And of course, the range is, as Stefan was telling, one of the most, let's say, visual attributes you can put a price tag on. Since the maximum speed of electric cars is not very much in the foreground for deciding for a car and for electric car. So it means I think the range is right now one of the top topics, and it took a while until the German car manufacturers were ready to bring cars in the market. First of all, these were the more important, more expensive cars. But now, as Stefan was telling, cheaper cars come into the market, and that's, I think, brings also the suppliers into the game. The knowledge of the suppliers concerning component optimizations is necessary to improve the range and also the ultra-fast charging capability. And both is something where even Trelleborg and Seals can play an important role.
The keyword infrastructure is something we are going to discuss later, because I've got a question from the audience to that topic. But first of all, I want to ask you, maybe Stefan, it's a topic for you, because we have a question from the audience. He or she asks, if vehicles and other equipment become increasingly electrified, what would actually happen during a power failure?
Okay. The good thing is I'm working for E.ON, which is one of the biggest distribution company in Europe, and is therefore prepared for those incidents. And as you can see, from time to time, even if there was a blackout 2 years ago in France, it affected not only France, and it spread it out to Switzerland, Italy, and also the southern part of Germany. And you have those incidents happen maybe every 2 to 3 years. Therefore, the grid companies are prepared for those events. They need to be prepared for that. They have an infrastructure promise to deliver. Therefore, e-mobility wouldn't add another complexity to that. That's number one. And number two, if in a certain local area there is a, let's call it a blackout, in today's world, we can easily route the driver to different charging locations and really tell him, okay, is it available or not? So I think by means of digitalization, we are able to manage that risk quite well.
Today, but also in the future?
I mean, in the future, even more.
Even
in the future,
more.
Even more, because you have more intelligent charging points. Right now, you have a lot of charging points in the ground, which cannot be seen from outside because they're not connected to any backend. In the future, that will change. Even in the private households, you have more and more intelligent wall boxes, and therefore you can steer the whole ecosystem even better.
Our need for energy is really increasing. I think everyone experienced that in the time at the beginning of the year during the lockdown time, because there was one thing, I think we all did it. We watched some series, we did some, let's say, Netflixing, and I did some research, and I found that Netflix gained 15.8 million additional users in the first quarter of the year. And what's interesting about that number is that 30 minutes of Netflixing releases as much CO2 as a 6 kilometer drive. And then I dived in deeper into research. And I found the following. Researchers at the University of Bristol have calculated that the entire IT system accounts for about 3% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. That is equivalent to air traffic. And I thought, wow, that's a number. So how do we get our energy really green? If we need so much energy, I think we really need green energy. So how do we do it?
I think one of the answer is blue hydrogen, which means hydrogen should be produced by means of renewable energy, which is in excess. Hydrogen can be also carried today in a better way. For example, liquid organic hydrogen carrier. And then at the point of destination, it can be reconverted into electricity again. Of course, there are certain assumptions on the efficiency of this process, but overall, it still stays green. The overall energy balance. That's one thing. The other thing is fostering decentralization of energy production, which means using solar panels, buffering that energy, which is a green energy, in electricity batteries, in electric batteries, and then charge it to the chargers or give that energy to the chargers, to high power chargers or AC chargers. That's definitely one of the measures we can take, apart from accelerating generation of renewables itself, like the wind parks or water energy.
Axel, since you're an e-mobility driver, you know that energy management is a big part of driving an electric car. There's recuperation, for example, but there's also the need to really manage the energy. How can we make green energy even more efficient? Maybe from the perspective of Trelleborg Sealing Solutions.
Yeah, I think the green energy is also about energy consumption. So how efficient do we use the energy which is available? And then it's mostly about friction reduction. So what we don't use up as friction, we don't need to charge. And therefore, it's a big challenge for everybody involved to talk about less weight and then also friction reduction. And then, of course, suppliers come into place who can deliver a certain knowledge in these fields. And coming back to light vehicles, then, of course, a heavy battery doesn't help. So that's also giving a certain perspective on high-range cars with heavy batteries. But on the other side, friction reduction is something we can face and or we are facing and developing products which can be used in the e-axle itself and seal as a sealing component, which is also optimized to be as frictionless as possible to increase the range of the vehicles and also the thermodynamic load on the system. And if you think also about the ultra-fast charging issue, then you talk also about thermal management of the battery, which has to be so performant, so high performance that you can put in all these 150 kilowatts or even more to charge the car. And also here, you use seals and valve systems, which can handle that as efficient as possible.
Hmm. I think there are a lot of systems already in the cars today, in electric cars, that do the energy management itself. So you, as a driver, I don't have to do anything because the battery managing is working with my car itself. So I don't have to do anything. That is very cool. And speaking of those examples, I also love examples. So maybe, Stefan, you can give us an example for producing, creating green energy. Do you have an example for that?
Yeah, for example, at our Schnellerwagen Park in Duisburg, which is our innovation campus or the ultra-fast charging station here in Duisburg we are operating. We have a semi-autonomous charging station here, which means there are different kind of ultra-fast charging station, and there's a certain ceiling, like at a petrol station. And on top of that ceiling, on the roof, we have installed a couple of megawatts of solar panels, and we can use the sun energy and buffer them in a battery and then produce, by means of that, green energy, which we can then give back to the cars at a later stage whenever that energy is needed. So that's an example how we have created such a format, a stationary format, and we can replicate it, of course, also at other locations.
Which brings me, to be honest, to our next podcast question. I love that part. It's the question, solution or sci-fi? I'm going to read out a statement. I want to hear from you. Is that really a solution for a future? Is that true, what I'm saying? Or is it more like an idea for a sci-fi movie? So here's your sentence. Solution or sci-fi? Electrical energy is more sustainable than renewable energy, for example, the solar energy. Stefan.
For me, it sounds a bit like sci-fi, to be honest.
Why?
Why? Because electric energy needs to be produced somehow. And if you look at our energy metrics, we have only 30 to 35% renewable energy within that mix. And over 60% is still conventional, which means that energy is less attractive, written less sustainable than the pure renewables, which is 100% green.
I put so much effort in that sentence, so hopefully, Axel, you have another opinion about it.
No, I need to agree. Sorry for that, Sarah. but I would also give a vision about that. What Stefan was telling about that station, which is living from its own energy and producing the energy and also giving that energy to the cars. I think that's going to be also something where new house builders will see over the next years, that this philosophy, this mindset is maybe also put into a legislative framework to produce the energy at your own home, store that energy and use it up with your own car. And that gives us a pretty nice feeling about being independent from a lot of other, let's say, impacts on our life. And this is something I see coming. So with a really very green and clean and lean approach about energy consumption and generation.
That sounds a little bit like sci-fi for me, but it would be perfect if we can do it. I mean, that's more like a green energy ecosystem, and that sounds very cool to me. So we have to speed up a little bit because we're at the end of our time and at the end of our podcast, but I have got two questions left, and I want to ask those questions. The first question, or the almost last question, is, do you think fully electric vehicles will eventually dominate the consumer automotive market, or are we likely to see even more alternatives to the traditional combustion engine? And I think they're talking about, yeah, as we told, gas or hydrogen or stuff like that.
These technologies come in parallel. Of course, if you look at the degree of maturity, the battery-driven e-mobility is mass marketable, or the most mass marketable technology. And hydrogen is also on the rise. And you can say, as a rule of thumb, the heavier the load is you want to transport, the more you go for hydrogen, as well as the longer the distances you want to drive, you should go for hydrogen. That still applies. You can see those if you look into the heavyweight industry. So MAN or Mercedes, they're all investigating here with their relevant R&D departments. But right now, e-mobility is the most dominant technology. So short term, you will not see a change, rather a reinforcement of that technology. But midterm, of course, for certain use cases, more and more hydrogen will also be prevalent.
Mm. Axel, you're the man for the details. Which impact has Trelleborg on the different driving technologies? Is there something where you say electric cars, that's something we really have a huge impact on it? Or is it just like, yeah, we can have an impact on every kind of driving technology?
I think it's both. So if you think about hydrogen, Stefan mentioned that already, it's something for the it seems to be ready for a heavy truck, not ready, but developed for heavy truck business, where you talk about long-range carriers. And you talk then about very, very challenging sealing topics, since you talk about permeation of very, very small, the smallest molecule. So means there is a big issue for us to develop the right materials. Of course, we can look at hundreds of recipes, but to choose the right one is an issue. We are working with that since a few years. What we see in parallel is that, of course, the partners in the automotive industry, they have developed now these different alternatives in parallel. So we will see then cars which are ready for an electric powertrain, which is battery driven, then also maybe also some niche cars with hydrogen, and then also, of course, synthetic fuels or other ways of propelling the car. And all of this has to be developed in the same development cycle. And this is a very resource intensive development. And we see that there is a need for highly specified and competent suppliers offering that on a local for local base also. We didn't talk yet about global differentiation. So some regions are more in favor of this solution. Some other regions are going for another one. So it's a big challenge for us to service these customers then on a global base. But with a global footprint as we have, it's a little bit easier, but it's still a challenge.
So there's still room for improvement. And you're right, it's a topic we hadn't discussed before, but we have to come to an end, unfortunately. And I've got one question left. And this question is, are there plans in place for OEMs and infrastructure developers to support a universal electric vehicle charge connector? And I think it's also about the infrastructure with the ultra-fast charging systems. Is there anywhere... And at some times, is there any time where we have those, this common charge connections? Stefan, please say yes.
Yes, I do say yes. Also, I will say probably there will still be two kind of plugs, the CHAdeMO standard and the combined charging standard, the CCS standard. So we need to live with two standards, but that's okay. But the most important thing is that we go away from country-specific regulations. If you go, for example, to France, whenever you build a public charging station, you need also to establish an AC station with 43 kilowatt, whereas the normal standard is 22 kilowatt. This is just one example of a silly national standard. Maybe it's a bit of protectionism, but overall, what I can see in the market is that local standards will be harmonized towards European standard. And that's good from a consumer perspective, because that means e-mobility will become seamless, e-mobility will become easy, and then adoption rate will increase.
Is that really a desirable future for the customers? Because when I charge my smartphone, I always think I'm breaking down the battery that fast because I'm charging that often and that fast. Is it really like that? So is it a desirable future to have ultra-fast charging systems everywhere?
So I think absolutely. So I think this will make the difference in making that mass compliant, since I think the vision is here as well, that you drive around and use a ultra-fast charging or fast charging at least in all these places you would be for 20, 30 minutes. Think about shopping, think about hairdresser and doctors. You would leave your car in a charging station and you would come back and then you have another 100, 150 kilometers and the visit of the gas station would be over. And this would add value to our daily life. Therefore, I'm convinced that super fast charging is the one and only right way to bring e-mobility to the mass.
At the end of our podcast, we always do the ceiling test, and we have two components which are very interesting in terms of material for sealing solutions. For example, the rubber. Rubber has got two interesting components. For example, resilience. That's the capability of a material to return to its initial state after huge pressure, and of course, flexibility. So here's the sealing test. Where do we need to become more resilient to drive e-mobility forward? And of course, where do we have to become more flexible to drive e-mobility forward? Stefan?
I think where we should become more resilient is that we have a standard saying each charging point, whether it's at home or whether it's installed in the public domain, should be intelligent charging point. So from a network perspective, from a energy perspective, you can see it and you can steer it. We talked about blackouts before, so it's really important to manage energy carefully, to manage the loads in the grid. And therefore, this is something we should be really resilient. We still see as an entry box still the so-called stupid box, which means it doesn't communicate. And therefore, that's not good from an energy perspective overall. That is my answer on the resilient side. And on the flexible side, if we look at, in German we say, Fördermechanismen, so the subvention schemes, we should be more flexible and really say, okay, from half a year to another half a year, what has worked out, which scheme, and maybe we skip one scheme and then go for another scheme. So I think not too rigid in our subvention schemes, but apply more flexibility here to bring that e-mobility forward.
Mm-hmm. Axel?
Yeah, resilience. To translate that, maybe there's a way to try to overcome that shock that we have now all in watching the brochures of the car manufacturers, seeing all the different styles of power plant systems. We talked about that already. To overcome that and to accept that, and coming back to the clever usage of the right power plant for our needs. And then to be flexible, and then just to also accept some new environmental topics that's leading our behavior, and accept that as the new reality. And that feels like the title that I gave at the beginning, that pretty much the same but feels completely different, is then somehow true.
That was a very good conclusion at the end. So nothing to add from my side, but I'm pretty sure that there are out there so many more questions about that topic. And I'm pretty sure that we will discuss those questions in another podcast episode. But for now, thank you so much for your insights and all your estimations on e-mobility in our future. And I say thanks, take care, and bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you don't want to miss anything, just subscribe to our podcast. And of course, we are happy to receive feedback from you. So we're looking forward to your ratings and comments. And of course, we still want to answer your questions. Therefore, feel free to write us at info.podcasts@trelleborg.com. Thanks a lot and see you next time.